Howard was on leave in Edinburgh when he first met his wife, Fredris. She was only 20 at the time. After their honeymoon in the Highlands of Scotland, he had to go off to the Dardanelles. And it wasn't until 2 years later that he saw her again.
I was introduced to her in Edinburgh on the 1st of April, the April Fool's Day. And I married her the 2nd of June. And she was one of the best women that ever crossed the pond. She was born in the city, only 30 years old she was. Never went back home. Worked hard. Took her part in all the concerts and every community thing that was going. Was friendly with everybody. I'll tell you how friendly she was with people. And when she got a stroke in 1948, in the middle of the winter, the people came from Niagara Falls and shoveled the road twice to St. John's in the day for to get a doctor to come into her. And it's snowing and drifting, and the doctor couldn't come in. Our doctor was sick. And that's neighbours. And that's a thing that wouldn't be done in any other country in the world.
How far was that, Howard?
48 miles. When I left for the Dardanelles, she left to come over here. And I was 2 years before I saw her again. Well, she was a great pianist. She had a lot of medals for playing. Well, I was years and years, you know, starting anew and not very strong before I got money enough to send her home. And the first time I got money for her to come home, I gave her $1,000 I'd saved up over the years because I worked hard, because I knew that she wanted to come home, you know, that's natural. And I gave her the money and she came down to St. John's and, hell, I thought, well, I said to the kids, well, your mom will be home, I guess, by this time.
In Scotland.
And a few hours after she came in, I said, I thought you were going home. Oh, she said, I wouldn't leave you and the children. She said, I wouldn't be happy. So she bought a piano, a grand piano. She was a wonderful piano. And she missed the music, you know. And she bought this piano and came home. Well, I'll tell you, that turned in wonderful, that. And the nights the neighbors would be in and the children as they'd be grow up. She wouldn't let them go out of the house in the evenings when they got 16 or 17 years old without having a little sing-song before they go. Well, it was years, you know, the fishery, years before I could get a chance. I made a big summer. Oh, I shared about $2,000 a man when the fish was hired. And I give her $2,000. Now, girl, I said, go home, for God's sake, and have a good time. And she was gone 9 days. And then she comes with a great big dodge. Bought a Dodge car. Well, we had some, you know. Well, you know what a Dodge meant to us. Now, that was only, she was only, there wasn't very many cars on the shore then, and she was the only woman to the driver on our shore. And you know what the roads were put in there then. Well, that was a big six-passenger Dodge. Well, we had a little store then, and she used to go down to St. John's. The hell, she used to have me nearly so crazy, and bring up the full of that car of freight, you know, for the store. And lots of times she wouldn't get in till 11 or 12 at night. I'd be down there on a straitjacket wondering whether she was after her. Because you know, Harold, you'd have to back up maybe a mile to get into a sandpit to let the car pass you. And the next time I give her the money, and she bought a suite of furniture and some of her gear for the house, so she never got home. But I'm thankful it wasn't my fault. She sure was a happy woman.
She never did go back to Scotland at all?
She never went back, no. And now the children are all, four boys and four girls ahead. And they're well off, every one of them are well off today and well married. And they're not ashamed of saying that they milked cows when they were young. And maybe cleaned out the stables. And hauled in manure. We had our ground was a mile from the house. Days that I was busy and couldn't go in with a load of manure in there and spread it in the fall. They never minded about going on, taking the horse and car and going in and dumping it where I tell them to dump it. And today, now, they're comfortably married, a whole lot of them, and they're not ashamed of working. Which I'm glad of, and they're not ashamed of being Newfoundlanders, neither.
We enjoyed ourselves hiking, fishing,
going on picnics every Sunday regularly. Daddy took us for long walks in the bush all the time and had found apple trees for us in there and had candy showers and so on. We really enjoyed ourselves in simple ways. There was no arrangements made of any description. This was in the summer. In the winter, we went on sleigh rides with the horses attached to our sleighs and just ordinary ones out in the field in the snow and skating on every little bit of ice we could find, of course. That type of thing.
Did you go out to the traps fishing?
Oh, yes, definitely. That was one of our great pleasures. Of course, we didn't go every day because we would get in the way of the men. But every now and then during the summer, perhaps 6 or 8 or 10 times during the summer, we would go out. And, of course, the more fish, the more exciting, the more fun we got out of it. I took my little boy out, my oldest boy, when I was home on holidays, and he just couldn't believe it. He was amazed at the amount of fish that were being brought into the boat. It was something he still remembers today. We, in our home, personally, we had music, a lot of music. My mother was very good on piano, my older sister also, and I think we spent 3/4 of our winters around the piano singing. Daddy used to tell a lot of stories, of course, and he would even rock us, about 6 or 8 of us in a rocking chair, sing us songs, old Camellia songs that were I think there was one around 70 verses long. We really used to enjoy that, and a lot of home life. You stayed in a lot, especially in the winter. Was centered around our piano and fireplace and living room.
The schoolhouse was situated on the side of the water, and we used to stand in the ring around the desk, boys and girls. It was coeducational. And you can hear the putter-putter of the old one-lung engines. Also, in later years, when I got 13 years of age, the excitement of signing on with my father's crew for my first go at the cod fishing business. The first year at 13, I did the summer months. It was too hard, considered too hard. And if you didn't have to do it, well, really, there weren't too many lads that did go fishing at this age. But there are kids that fished at 9 years of age and pulled an oar as well. After my 13th year, I left school took up fishing until I was 18, or just about 18, just approaching 18, when I joined the British Navy, St. John's Newfoundland, HMS Berwick.
It's impossible in the space of a mere hour to cover adequately the story of Howard Morey. Even in the space of several hours, we'd still have to leave out much of the material that Howard recalls and will pass on as it was passed to him. The children themselves, well, aside from the 3 still living in Newfoundland, it's unlikely that the others will return. But the legacy of life in Fairyland is indelibly stamped upon their lives.
I don't think I could live there anymore. Perhaps it's because of my family. I think the opportunities are better here for them. Certainly the employment opportunities are better. And were I to go back there, if there was such a thing as making a living there, my children would then have to leave, I think, later on, or some of them surely would. Much of your philosophy, much of my philosophy, I should say, and my sense of values were shaped in Newfoundland. And I believe they've stood me in good stead many times, because I don't believe you can grow up, you can develop the same philosophies by growing up in a city, a large city particularly. You don't have the same regard for people or their troubles. Their troubles don't bother you too much. It's also very impersonal. This is a gulf between the large city and the small town anyway, even on the mainland of Canada. But still, I'm happy here, my family is happy here, and taking it all on balance, and when you take the family into consideration, then this is what the basis of decision, that I would stay here. My family is happy. I'm happy. It's a nice place to live. And I won't forget, however, and there will be a void always that won't be filled by living in a large city.
I miss it. I miss especially the sea, I think, the sound of the sea, being close to it. I I miss also the fact of living so close to people and being, knowing everybody, so to speak. And, but if I could know that we could live as we're living right now, today, I would love to go back.
Standard of living.
The standard of living that we have today, yes, in our family, personally speaking. I would love to go back there. And I think my children would love it too. It's a type of life I think any child likes.
Several days of frustration, sort of, when you get upset by various types. You say, well, wouldn't it be nice now to be back in nice, quiet old Newfie, with nothing to bother you, sort of. Not too much worried about how many bucks you are going to make tomorrow. But then you start thinking about various comforts you have here and the pleasure attached to living in this part of the world. And you think about going back and doing some hard physical labor after a comparatively work-free years, many years of light labor as compared to the drudgery attached to fishing, and then you veto the idea right away. In addition to this, you've got your family well and on the way towards being grown up, and I don't think life would suit them either.
I like the fairyland the best of all, of course.
You do?
Yeah.
And what about the rest of the world?
And the next part of the world I like is Britain, England and Scotland. And you can have all the rest of it, you can have all America. I wouldn't give the one half mile in Newfoundland for the whole damned American continent and all that money is in it.
Legacy, the man from Fairyland.
Organized and directed by Doug Brophy. Interviews and additional material, Howard Horwood. Technical operation, Ron Grant. The program was written and produced by John Hood. Executive producer, Harry J. Boyle. Your announcer, D.B. Holly. ¶¶